And this is Melting Pot, here every Sunday from 4 to 6 p.m. My name is Michael Barnes, your host, and we are celebrating our first year here on KPFK, playing you some interviews and performances from this last year. This is another set of three performances from the past year on the show, beginning with L.A., well, now she's based in L.A., though originally she was in New York, Katie Goodman of Vivian Girls, her side project, La Sera, which I do believe are playing around town a little bit later next week. Never Come Around is the name of the song that she recorded here in January as we continue with this one-year anniversary celebration here at KPFK and Melting Pot.
One, two, three, four.
If you ever were to call me from LA, I will simply tell you that I've gone away. I can handle hearing from you every day. I'll just grab your head and try to be okay.
Petit père. qui est bien ancré dans un surfeur, qu'il ne plie pas sous la tempête, efface chaque jour une fête.
Hundred Dead Loving Souls.
One, two, three.
Thank you. of 100 dead and loving souls. In a sea of 100 dead and loving souls. Climbing a thousand hours. How it would feel to be on top of one of
music from Chicano Batman, recorded live on Melting Pot here back in September of last year. 100 Dead and Loving Souls. Also in that set, you heard music from Francoise Brut, who came to us all the way from France to perform several songs in that session. Though you heard my favorite, Les Junes Pousses, once again from Francoise Brut. And also at the top of the set, another LA group, in addition to Chicano Batman, at least an LA group now. Katie Goodman's basically out here. So La Sera is what you heard at the top of the set, and they're going to be performing a couple of shows, actually, in the next couple of weeks at the Music Box on the 11th, and then at Make Music Pasadena. Chicano Batman, actually, I should mention, is also going to be performing at Grand Performances later on in the year, in August, and hopefully you'll actually be able to get to come down and do a electric set, a plugged-in set, as it were. Going to continue things now, playing you pretty much the full interview. It's actually a little edited version because the interview was quite long. We talked for a really long time, and several hours if you include us talking in the car as I drove them to the interview. That's how much I wanted to make sure this band got on the KPFK airwaves, actually picked them up. So Quadrant is an amazing group who's had quite a couple years here in many circles, and I'm very proud and very happy to play this performance and interview for you once again here on our one-year anniversary show. So this is an interview and performance that we recorded with Quadrant from October of last year, and I really do hope you enjoy this one right now on KPFK in Melting Pot. You're listening to KPFK 90.7 FM Melting Pot here every Sunday from 4 to 6 p.m. This Sunday, we have in the studios right now special guests all the way from Denmark. Quadrant is here. How you guys doing?
Good.
Good.
Now, we're going to do a little interview, and you're also going to play a few songs and start off with some songs, so I'll just throw it straight to you. This is Quadrant right now on Melting Pot here at KPFK.
I know the truth.
Somebody was telling me I could change my own seasons. Somebody was telling me to alter my reasons. Somebody was telling me I could change my own seasons. Somebody was telling me to alter my reasons, yeah. My reasons, yeah. My reasons, yeah. See, those who let them say time will be no healer.
Very nice. Music from Quadrant here on KPFK 90.7 FM, Melting Pot. I just want to thank you guys for coming in
of course,
once again,
yeah.
And for performing. I still feel like in some ways the band is kind of a Los Angeles, in some ways maybe best kept secret, still kind of a secret. So could you tell listeners a little bit about how you guys got together and put this sound together?
Yeah, I mean, it was a funny process, or a very different process, and I think you kind of forget it now, but when we were starting out to create this, we didn't have any like bigger aspirations or ambitions other than actually just to make a record. And it's, in many ways, I think that was a big advantage, because we didn't have any pressure, so we were just, you know, we were just doing whatever we felt like, and each song was kind of just a trial and error kind of experience, like figuring out what works, what doesn't work, you know, just still playing around. And I think some of the most interesting music is when you're just playing around. So we had that going for us, and we got this offer, or Coco got this offer, from a film director who was interested in getting the same voice kind of like as a cohesiveness or like a red thread through a movie. And they wanted some songs that they could, you know, they could put in there, and they wanted like it to be almost kind of conceptual or like the same sound of some sort. And we had been slowly working more and more together, and Coco approached me with this, and we just started figuring out like what to do, if it was going to be in Danish or is it in English, what kind of sound is it going to be, what's the theme, what's the topic, how is it, you know, is it a duo, is it a group, is it just the two of us, you know, all of these were kind of like open questions that we were kind of trying to figure out. And we just slowly made the music, and what was amazing was that they were sponsoring the record, more or less. They were paying for having the option to use whatever songs we did for their film, but other than that, we had all the rights to the songs, so we just had like a carte blanche, kind of like just like free hands to do whatever we wanted to do musically, because the film director just loved Coco's voice. So, you know, that was a really good start. So we never had that pressure from a label, or you have to do this and this and that, or there has to be this and this and that. We were just coming up with the concept as we were going along, figuring out the sound and how we were going to do it. So after that, we didn't even have a label to release it on, because it was for a movie. And I think the producer of the film that was producing it wanted to try and recoup some of the money, so he was actually the one that was like most aggressive trying to get deals with labels and so forth, and trying to set up a deal of some sort. And he found this label in Denmark, which has proven out to be really nice for us, called Alarm Music. And from there on, it kind of just, like a lot of things just kind of stumbled into each other. And we're still not quite sure how people got a hold of the CD. Like, I mean, now there's the internet and people can find music, but we never mailed the CD to anyone in the States to start off with. And it wasn't even on iTunes before January worldwide. And then it was taken off, and then it was put up again when Plug Research took over the worldwide deal. But before that, it was just like it was a Danish secret. It wasn't even an American secret, you know. Yeah. So I think it's just you know, without rubbing our own halos, it's kind of a story of just good music, or at least people feel it's good music, and it's just spreading because it's good music, not because there's a lot of money to promote it, or we have a video with 8 naked women, or, you know, it's just been about the music, and that's kind of been what is happening all the way, in each step. So
yeah, I mean, it almost seems like, you know, an independent musician's kind of like dream fairy tale, the way everything has come together. I mean, both in terms of just kind of coming together, and the two of you had done work prior to the film score.
Yeah.
Right? Okay, so you kind of were aware of each other, but you really hadn't done kind of just let's make music together, like had that kind of conversation or started making music. It really was just it just kind of came together like that.
Kind of. I mean, we were slowly getting into it, but I think with all really good partnerships or musical collaborations, mm-hmm. it's not a process that takes like a week. It's a longer period of getting to know each other, getting to know each other's ambitions, figuring out what the other person wants, how you work well together. I mean, it's in many ways like a marriage also, you know. There's a lot of things that you need to work out and make sure that works, and you need to trust each other in many ways, and you like understand each other, like how do we go from not having anything to completing a song, you know, especially mm-hmm. when you're only two people. You know, there's a lot of decisions that we make on our own, whereas if you're in a band, then, you know, the drummer plays the drums, the singer often writes everything and or at least the lyrics and has the melody, and that's, you know, his, and the guitarist plays the guitar. And here it was more like a collaborative effort between the two of us, figuring out like how are we going to do this, and it's still developing. We're still figuring out better and better ways, and so it's a process. So that took us a while before we got to that point where we were like, let's do an album, let's, you know, and let's call it something.
Yeah,
and
we didn't really have time to discuss it. No. Mm-hmm. I mean, we should still have that discussion, like, yeah. What do we want to be?
Yeah.
It was more like, okay, these people want some music from us. What can we do? And we knew we liked each other, so it's like, we need this to happen.
Yeah.
And it turned out really well. And I mean, just talking about it right now, I'm still like, did this really happen?
Yeah.
I still remember when I just knew Robin from watching him on the streets and heard of him, and now I'm actually working with him.
That's weird.
Thank you.
Yeah, you're welcome.
And how much of the music was actually created specifically for the film? Like, what's on the record was basically the entire record, originally things that you were conceiving for use in the film?
Good question. How should we put that? I mean, some of the lyrics were, I mean, it's kind of nice actually to have something that you can use as an inspiration, and we used it partly, but it wasn't like it was directly about anything. Like, but there was.
No, I think the reason why we agreed to do music for the film was because that they just wanted whatever we made, so it mm-hmm. wasn't like, oh, we have to do a up-tempo song, we have to do a slow song. It's more like, you know, whatever we feel like doing, and then hopefully they liked it, and they did. So no, it's more like whatever we like. Mm. I mean, we talk about when we start to work on a song, and we talk about like where we want this song to go, just because there's not only one person working. So it's nice for the other one to know which direction and which inspiration are in the songs.
Yeah, it actually, it makes, I mean, in terms of listening to the record, to me, it makes a lot of sense that a lot of it was kind of conceived around film, because it has this real cinematic quality. And that was one of the things that, I mean, it, I guess in some ways, and I think you've actually, I think at least Robin has used this term to describe y'all's sound, is kind of like an electronic soul kind of sound. But there are a lot of different kind of musical textures and colors in this music. It's like there, every time, I feel like that first couple of times when I was listening to him, it was really brand new. Like I'd feel like, okay, this is definitely kind of like a straight kind of modern soul kind of feel. And then like something really unexpected would happen. Like these horns would just come out and really almost seem to work against like the kind of tone. And it's just like when I try to like explain it to people, like what you guys sound like, I'm like, well, you know, it's kind of like if you take like some Sly Stone, mid-70s Sly Stone, but then you add in like some David Lynch, like film music with that.
Okay.
And even like kind of some straight Motown kind of sounds, but always with this like really kind of vibrant and like almost like happy kind of sound to it. But
like all those things shouldn't, it's like it shouldn't sound like that.
You sure you're not clairvoyant?
No.
Careful, Robin's falling in love with you right now.
That's really crazy. Actually, Sly Stone was probably like my biggest teenage fascination, like crazy. Like I bought stuff on eBay, like paper articles I paid like $20 for, like crazy, and wrote articles on him in English when I was like 14 years old and could hardly like spell, you know, like I was so into him, and I know all of his records like word for word and like note for note. And Lynch also is like a probably my favorite film director of all time, so you're pretty on point with that. But I think we both really like a lot of genres, a lot of styles, and I think it's important for the both of us that we try, and every time that we do a song, we're trying to approach it in a new way, or trying to. This my old theory teacher used to say that you should look at music as you have to remember to pay back with interest. You know, like that's your responsibility. Is that if you do something that you want to share with others, it's your responsibility of creating something that will not enlighten them, but you know, will make them have to think, or you know, will move them in any kind of way. And I mean, there's a million ways to do that, of course, but one of the ways that I think we both really like and think is interesting is mixing elements that necessarily shouldn't be mixed. You know, like trying things from a new way, having that challenge to kind of, you know, go to the other side of the mountain and actually make those things work. And
it's all about balance too, right?
Totally.
Really into balance. I mean, if we have no, we don't want to overdo anything. It's all about finding like the right level.
Sure, definitely, yeah. Contrast and balance, like definitely.
Yeah, and that's, you know, as I was saying, it's like on the one hand, the music is very easy to describe, and especially it really don't even have to describe it. You can just play it for people and they feel it immediately. But it does have that quality of kind of like being very easy to describe and very difficult to describe. There are like a lot of moments, you know, some of the songs are like clearly inspired by things, you know, like a song like Jeans, a clear like Sly Stone reference, the Into My Own Jeans and into My Own Thing.
Definitely.
kind of, but it switches it up in a way that's not, it's not anything close to a cover. It's not even really a sample. That's the same case with another song. I think it's Tone, that has almost kind of like a reference to the Shangri-La's.
Remember. The Remember part.
But it's something that when you know that song, it like it pops out to you and it's like, whoa, didn't expect that to get there.
No.
But then it also is just something that really kind of grabs you for listeners, I guess, that don't quite have all those reference. Just really something that just kind of like pulls you in.
It's more
elements are there.
Sorry, and it's definitely, you're right. I mean, it's definitely meant more as an homage or like an ode to those people than trying to take their idea and using it. You know, like I think we both appreciate sampling, but the way that we like sampling is if you take something and you create it into something entirely new, and you build upon that. You don't only use that and loop it, and then, you know, you sing on top of it. You take elements of it and create something new to like mix it and fusion it. You know, and I think that's what is interesting. You know, and that's kind of the same discussion about like taking different genres or mixing them together, having, for instance, a track where it's you know, you can strip it down and you can also just play it on the piano. It could be a jazz standard, but the way that it's packaged and the way that Coco is singing it, it's suddenly a whole another different place too, and it has electronic elements too, and the synthesizers are like gliding portamento, but it's also got strings, you know, so it's kind of like 2010, but it's also 1961. I think that's, you know, and sometimes it comes off like clearer than others. Sometimes it's more like, you know, small details sometimes it's you know it's easier to tell, mm-hmm. but I think that's what interests us, and we were also discussing that a lot because at the point where we were doing the record, there was this really big retro soul thing going on with Amy Winehouse and mm-hmm. Duffy and et cetera, and we both you know love a lot of that music and a lot of those artists and singers, but it's just it's funny also to try and incorporate what's happening now and not only trying to duplicate something, you know, not renovate something, but trying to innovate something, like yeah. trying to add on. Because there is a lot of good stuff happening now, I think, you know, like everyone has the possibility of making music and expressing themselves. And there's so many new sounds and ways of creating sounds to common man that you can get. That you couldn't when you were in the... You know, like, if you look at records in the 70s, if you had to use a synthesizer, you needed, like, a programmer mm-hmm. to, like, program it for you, you know? Mm-hmm. And a synthesizer would be, like, $30,000 or $40,000 or $50,000. Like, it was only Stevie Wonder who could afford one in soul music, or else you had to rent one, you mm-hmm. know? And now all you need is a MIDI keyboard and a computer, and you can even... probably download a program illegally on the net, and then you have it in within like $200. Mm-hmm. And I think some of those aesthetics and ideas and sounds, and those are really important too. And they're a product of me and Coco's generation also, I think. And so they're important to also have in the music.
Soul music has for a long period of time had this real kind of attachment to black culture and African Americans, and in Denmark, I can't imagine there being a lot of African Americans there, and neither of you are, and so that was one of the things I was wondering about in hearing your music. I think there might be kind of in the U.S. and the States, kind of audiences maybe expect a certain kind of look, and then to meet you is a little bit different. And I was just wondering, like how you kind of how you deal with that kind of particular kinds of issues around in this music, for better or worse.
It's a good question.
Yeah,
really good.
First
question.
Of all, we are African Americans.
Yeah.
We just lost some color.
Right. You know, actually, you know, genetically speaking, very true.
Yeah.
Everybody comes from Africa originally.
That's I mean, true. but actually, I mean, the name Quadron is not just for fun. My grandfather, he is actually African, so I'm a quarter black, and Robin's grandfather is actually African-American.
Yeah, he's from Flint, Michigan.
Uh-huh. So there you go.
Yeah, and then...
And we also get the story behind the name, very kind of particular American racial reference, Quadroon, the thing, especially in some parts of the South, for people who have that one quarter black.
Exactly.
There you go. I'm completely shocked and surprised now, as well I should be. Somebody who teaches race in classes, that's exactly, you know, what I should know better.
No. We took out one O because it looked better.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
In Danish, it's actually spelled Kvadron.
Mm-hmm.
So it's like a weird mixture between the American quadroon and quadron. Mm-hmm. Which you say in Danish.
Yeah.
And
we're very proud of that little quarter.
We are, actually.
We're very proud of it.
We really.
Because, as you said, there's not many African-Americans in Denmark. So whatever little bit of color you have, you're very proud of.
Mm.
I don't know exactly if our genes is where we, you know, have the soul music from. Mm. But... For us, soul is the truth of mm-hmm. music.
Yeah.
That's where we find the truth. So it just seems so obvious for us to make music that we love.
It feels very natural.
Yeah.
And I think in many ways that in Europe there's a whole different way of looking at race.
Mm-hmm.
And... what we thought was interesting also was that normally people aren't... I mean, they're proud of it, but it's not necessarily something that they'll go around saying, you know, like I don't tell people that my grandfather is African-American necessarily unless it comes up in conversation. 'Cause
mm-hmm.
to me, it doesn't matter. Like, I'm colorblind. I don't care if, you know, you're blue or green or what you are. But it does have a meaning still, race. And it's not something that, also in Denmark, where the rules for migration are really strict, mm-hmm. it's not something that you go out and tell publicly, or that you're like want to, you know, show the whole world, or that you want to focus on. It's mm-hmm. at least not something that we've seen with other Danish artists. So we thought it was interesting also that we had that similar background, and we have, to some extent, kind of a similar background in some regards. And trying to, instead of like that being not a disadvantage, but something that we would, you know, try and shy away from in the media, you know, show it, you know, like say we're really proud of that. Yeah, and I think that's not something that you see every day. You know?
I think it is in some ways, as you were saying, kind of a very particular kind of European sensibility around race, but not so different in a lot of ways from American one as well, even though there are very different kind of ways of, like, here it's very, we're very color conscious about things, and a lot of times that does get wrapped into music, and it doesn't seem to be the same case, which is part of the reason I think so many African American artists have enjoyed such great success in a lot of European countries.
Definitely.
But it's interesting when it comes over in kind of in a different way too. To me, it's just about, you know, the feeling that people evoke in their music and the talent that's there. And that's something that, and clearly, as you were saying, you know, at the beginning, clearly inspired by a lot of these artists, but at the same time wanting to add your voice and something new to it as well.
Definitely.
Which we definitely appreciate.
It's been funny sometimes when girls in crowds have been yelling like, "Oh, that white girl can sing!"
Yeah.
I never considered myself as white.
No.
I feel like I'm black.
That's interesting also, because in Denmark, Coco wouldn't necessarily be considered white.
Mm-hmm.
She would be. Considered mixed, you know. So it's like you're saying, it's the eye of the beholder, and it's so different, you know, from whose eyes or whose perspective you're looking at.
And I'm not. Yeah. I forget it. So yeah. I'm like, what are you? What?
What? Why?
What are you? Yeah. I mean, what does that have to do with anything?
Yeah. But it is really interesting. Also, though, you're talking about the exchange, like American artists being appreciated in Europe and European artists getting more and more recognition in the States, is something that we've kind of also rode on, that wave, and like you were mentioning, a Little Dragon also. Mm-hmm. Excuse me. That is, I think, you know, there's an element of the grass is green on the other side, of course. But I think also that... you know, mixing it differently is always very fascinating. And I think the soul, R&B, urban, whatever scene now in the States is very much inspired by European music, whereas 20, 30 years ago, maybe even just 10 years ago, there was a sound of its own. Like it kind of had created its own sound. Mm-hmm. There's still some small elements of that happening all the time, of course, and subcultures and subgenres and everything, but it's looking, gravitating towards Europe more and more and more, and it's just the reverse for a lot of European artists.
Mm-hmm.
They're looking to America, so, you know, it's kind of that also, I think, you know, like we're really into what we didn't have, or we didn't have around us, mm-hmm. also, and trying to incorporate that, and we're kind of trying to put it into like our version of what we were brought up with, you know, which is of course also a lot of European music, so it comes like in a fresh kind of package.
Mm-hmm.
And we've been kind of lucky to ride on that also. I think that the R&B and urban music right now is a little not desperate, but it's kind of looking for where it should go, yeah. And like new sounds and
it seems lacking direction in a way.
A little, maybe, yeah. A little. If at least if you know there was the neo soul period, and you know there's been kind of those periods that have been really strong, and right mm-hmm. now it's kind of little all over, and some of the really talented major artists are even not struggling, but they're looking to try and figure out a sound or a way to approach it in a new way, and even looking more and more onto Europe. Mm-hmm. So I think we've come here, and it's always fresh when you hear something that's you know approached a little different. So
when can we expect something new from Quadrant?
Well, the reason that I'm out here is actually because we're working on the next album.
Aha.
Yes. we have maybe 10 demos at this point. But, I mean, music takes time.
Yeah.
And we want to do it even better this time. Yeah. So we need to make it as perfect as possible. When it's ready, it's ready. But it will be within the next year.
Yeah.
Okay.
That's the game plan.
All right. And is there any way we can get you guys to perform a couple more songs?
Oh, yeah.
Absolutely.
Yes. Okay. We've been speaking with Robin and Coco of Quadrant here at KPFK 90.7 Melting Pot. And I'll just throw it back to you guys for a couple more songs.
Thanks.
Still a fool, but I have grown apart.
warm you in my arms and melt your fears away. Show you all the magic that a perfect love can make. I need you that day, so baby, be mine. Baby, be mine. And boy,
coming from Quadrant here at KPFK and Melting Pot, and I just can't thank you guys enough for coming through.
Pleasure,
anytime.
Yeah.
So music from Quadrant, interview that we had last year in October, and big thanks again to Robin and Coco for coming in, and to all the artists who graced us during that first year, and also big thanks to the people who did the sounds, Dan Mizrahi and Tamika Zaghi, and indirectly Mark Maxwell as well. And thank you guys for listening and making the first year so nice and keeping me here. Folk Scene is up next. We got regular things going on next week for Melting Pot. I hope you'll join us. Again, all of the interviews and performances that you heard are archived on meltingpotblog.com under the category Be Our Guest. And I will see you guys next week. Y'all take care until then.